I'm Roger. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be with you. I need to try and make some things clear before I start. First, I'd like to introduce my imaginary friend, Dennis. Dennis can't make it. He's on the West Coast on a trip for work. So, unfortunately, the good cop is not here. Dennis kind of is the guy that rounds my edges for me. There are no AA authorities. I'm not an AA authority. I'm not an AA historian. I'm not anointed. I'm not approved. I am simply an alcoholic who's recovered using the text that we study, the big book, and the steps inside it, and the traditions. And I haven't had a drink since October 11th, 1978. So I'm an expert on my experience. I'm not an expert on yours or anything else, but I was raised by some really nasty guys in AA. And they gave me AA straight. They didn't dress it up. They didn't make it pretty. They didn't encourage me to wait till I feel better or I'm ready. They didn't do any of that stuff. But they also didn't go around beating me up. That might be God. Or the pizza guy. So, for you to know if what I'm relating to you is accurate, you're going to have to study. You're going to have to study the big book, the 12 and 12, AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, Pass It On. You're going to have to study that stuff because that's our history. And everything I'm going to say, you should be able to find either literally or in principle in those books. If I don't say that, it's clearly something I've made up. It may work for me, but it may not work for you. So that's the kind of stuff they would say to me. And that's how I got into the book, actually. Because they'd say stuff, and I go, we'll see about that. You know? And I go, where is that? And they say, it's somewhere in the first 164 pages. You know? What page? I don't know. Go find it, you know? And that's what I tell guys that I sponsor. I say, if what I tell you is not in this book, then you can tell me to take a flyer. And they love that idea. And it gets them into the text. It gets them looking for ways to tell me to buzz off. The service manual would be another one thing you might want to look at, especially if you have trouble sleeping. It works every time. There's good information in there. Before we get into this exercise, part of this is it's foundational. You know, I need to know what AA is and what it isn't. I need to know when I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or when I'm in a meeting of a version of it. Because I don't need versions. I don't need AA 2.0 or AA Light. I just need AA. Whatever the hell that is. And I was blessed to be around some guys that knew what it was, and their commitment was to have it be there for me the way they got it. My commitment has been the same for the guys that I'm blessed enough to have in my life that I can aim and teach and study with and guide. That's the deal. We don't need your version of this. We just need this version preserved because it works really well when it's done. So AA came from a lot of different sources. We got pieces from medicine, from Silkworth, physical allergy, mental obsession. We got pieces from Carl Jung, the necessity of the psychic change. Silkworth had observed that, hadn't quite, they called it a moral psychology. Jung, before they translated all this stuff, said, you got to find God. I mean, that was, they took all the God out of Carl Jung stuff when they translated it. But he was a big God guy. He was a big spirit guy. He was a multidimensional guy. We got some stuff out of the Oxford group. We got some stuff. Some of the greatest stuff we got by accident. We got by accident. You know, example. Ebi. I have, you know, the famous conversation at the kitchen table with Bill and Ebi, and Bill's drinking, and Ebi's showing up to try and carry this new discovery he's found. He hasn't had a drink in several weeks, and he's on fire, you know, and Bill's going, oh, Jesus, here we go. And in the book, when Bill's talking about this part of the conversation, he says, my friend looked at me and said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Mm-hmm. And all my prejudice melted away and da-da-da, you know. Now, that idea was not an Oxford group idea. And when you hear Ebi tell that story, I got some recordings of Ebi, I think I do, radio interviews talking about that, and his version of that was quite different than Bill's. He said, Christ, I'd been talking to Bill for hours. I finally threw up my hands and said, choose your own damn conception of God, and I left. Now, who cares? Who cares? Ebi was not a learned guy. Ebi was not a student of anything. He was a spoiled rich kid and a drunk, and he wasn't real bright. But that idea, choose your own conception of God, along with progress, not perfection, made it possible for guys like me to come in the door. You know, you read the original manuscript, which is a piece I really dig. I like it. I like the attitude of it, you know. But it's a blessing that that's not what we sanctified, because none of us would probably be in this room if that was the deal, because we would say, screw you. And that's why they changed it, because when they talked about it, they said, you know, no one likes to be talked. We don't like to be talked to like that, you know. And it conceptually, it's true. You know, if you've gotten to this point, you're ready to leap. You're ready to take this third step thing. And if you're not ready, either toss the book or start over again, because you've missed something. They give us all that stuff coming up to the third step just to answer the questions of the first two steps. Am I powerless? Is my life unmanageable? Do I believe in a power? Am I willing to believe in a power? And if the answers to any of those are no, you got to go back and start over, because you can't do this half-assed. It just doesn't work. I have life experience. It doesn't work. 11 and a half steps, two steps, one step, it just doesn't work. It's a 12-step program. So, lots of different influences. Also, Christ was a big influence in these guys. Not the religion of Christ, but the teaching of Christ. They referred to it as first century Christianity, which was Christianity before there was a church for it. Okay? What Christ taught was consciousness. He taught being. And there's a thing in his teachings called the law of life. And everyone's familiar with it. We call it karma. It's what I think, say, and do to you will be done unto me. Eastern discipline calls it karma. They've been talking about it for thousands of years. It's not a new idea. It's not a new idea, but try it on. And when you come and you say, you won't believe what they've done to me now. You know, I got my new resentment, you know. And I lay it out there, and the question I always ask is, have you ever done that to anyone? I've never had a guy say no. I've never had a guy say no. Oh, I've never lied. I've never stolen. I've never cheated. I've never said I was going to do one thing and do another thing. I've never. No, you've done that. You've done that. You didn't do that because you were bad. You did it because you were sick. You did it because you were warped. My head didn't let me know that for years. So, here's a couple things I'm going to read that are going to be very familiar, but I want to read them because it's AA's message. It's not my message. It's AA's message. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The common problem, alcoholism. Okay? The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. We're all familiar with that tradition. Desire to stop drinking. You got a desire to stop drinking? Yes, I do. That means you can be in the meeting drunk. Doesn't mean you can disrupt it, but it means you have a right to be there. The only question is, do you have a desire? How the hell do I know if you have a desire? I don't. But it allows us to have the space to come in and find out. And if we're going to have guys at the door judging who's got a desire or not, we're going to be in deep doo-doo. You know, I had a desire to disrupt the meeting. You know, and I would wrap that little tradition around me, and they go, yeah, yeah, you have a right to be here, but you don't have a right to disrupt. And I thought, that's rather narrow, you know. But I need to give you a picture of where I was at when I came here. Kidney and liver damage. I was bleeding from every orifice in my body. I had a distended liver. I had been hospitalized for barbiturate poisoning. I had a huge amphetamine habit. I had drank as far as I could, as long as I could, and I couldn't drink anymore. I hadn't filed taxes, federal or state, in 5 years. I had warrants in a half dozen states. Now, I was not a bank robber. But these were states that if I would have been found in, I would have gone to jail. And so I had really interesting routes crossing the country, especially from here out west and down south. It was rather, you know, why are we going through North Carolina? Because we can't go through anything east of here to the Mississippi. I had a divorce. I had restraining orders going both ways. And I had been running a little entrepreneurial exercise, import-export business. And the front for that was a motorcycle gang that I hung with when I wasn't doing other stuff. And they fronted me a lot of money, and I had a problem. When I got loaded, I got generous. And I just wanted us all to get loaded, you know. And I owed them many thousands of dollars. They were not interested in my spiritual evolution. And the truth is, the word was that they were going to kill me. But the truth is, they knew where I was and they could have killed me at any time. But I lived in absolute terror. Between the motorcycle gang and the IRS, you know, that's enough to keep anyone drinking. And, I had about $10,000, $15,000 worth of bad checks. My concept, my financial concept was a little tweaked. And I thought if I had checks, I had money. And other people didn't agree, but I papered a lot of saloon walls with my checks. So anyway, you would think, plus I was a devout atheist. I was an evangelical atheist. I bailed on church when I was 12. So that's what I showed up with here. I didn't go to treatment. I sobered up on the street in a flop house I was living in. I had two drunks babysit me. One is dead from drinking and one is still drinking, as far as I know. And it took, I don't know, somewhere between 7 and 9 days. And I shook everything at the same time. Not recommended. And probably the only reason I survived it was because I was young and I was pretty strong. At least my plumbing was strong. And when I came out of that detox, the very first coherent thought that my brain constructed, well, I'm sure not going to AA. Followed by, I'll do this my way. My dad sobered up 10 years in front of me, so I knew what about AA. I had read this big book the last several years I drank, and I'll report to you, I didn't get a lot out of it, but I sure as hell knew what I was. I was an alcoholic. I was one of these guys. But I had made the decision, screw it. I'm going to die. That's what I'm going to do. And I got my diagnosis when I was in the back end of my 26th year. And the doctor that interviewed me and did the test said I had about 12 to 18 months to live if I kept doing what I was doing. My response to that was relief. And I went back and I just drank till I couldn't drink. And being an atheist, I couldn't have God surrender me. Dr. Bob talked about this in some of his writings. The bottle surrenders some guys. And that's what my experience was. I was drinking in my bar. Like shots and beer, shots and beer. I would come. Bar drinkers will understand this. You have your stool, your drink, your bartender. God, it was a beautiful thing. God, I just loved it. You just come, and you would sit down. And you, if you had money, you'd put it on the table, and they knew you were okay. And if not, they knew you were running a tab. And you just stare at the bar and wait for your drinks to appear. And everyone knew, don't even talk to him until the third one, you know. I just loved that. I just thought that was so damn respectful. It was just so nice. I just felt so damn good about me. And so I'm in there drinking, and it's a rough bar. And I was not a rough guy. That's not the picture I'm painting. But the bar was owned by the biker gang. And they were selling everything in the world out the back door and around the country. And I was there because the band I was in played at some of their functions, and they liked me because I was crazy. They honored insanity. And so I was under this umbrella of protection so I could be there. Now, I'm drinking, and my whiskey comes out my nose. I've got two problems. One, did anyone see that? And the second one is, how am I going to get that off the bar into my mouth? Being a keen possessor of a giant intellect, I surmised I was suffering from an amphetamine deficiency. So I ran to the bathroom to take a handful of speed, and I couldn't swallow it. And I walked out of the bar that night crying, and I said, I'm done. I can't do this. That's when I went back to the flop house and announced my detox. I had no idea that I had taken the first step. But I am blessed because I was the hopeless variety. I didn't get a little couple of consequences here and run and get an assessment and decide I need to do something about this. I ran it beyond any control at all. And I was stopped. I didn't stop me. I was stopped. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I didn't believe in anything except me and Smith and Wesson. So it couldn't be a God thing, you know. And I was not looking forward to a sober life. I was not thinking, oh boy, now I can go to AA and I can grow up and be like my dad. You know, I was not thinking that. That thought I had, I'll do this my way, is how I got there. I did everything my way. In AA, you will do it our way. You will not do it your way. Because your way doesn't work. That's what they told me. Your way doesn't work. So, I think you will too, not do this AA thing until you're convinced you have no other option. Because when we balk, like I balked, I didn't have a problem with being an alcoholic. I didn't have a problem with being powerless over alcohol or having an unmanageable life. I had a problem with the other 11 steps. So I just thought I wouldn't do them. And I thought it was clear I had a drinking problem. It was crystal clear I had a drinking problem. So I quit drinking. Then the logic follows, then I have now taken care of the problem. If that was true, we wouldn't be here. We'd all stop drinking, and we'd just go back and build a new life or resume the life we had. I'm not like Jim and Fred in the Big Book, the car salesman and the accountant. I'm not like those guys. They had one problem, just couldn't drink. Everything else worked great. Had these wonderful lives. Everyone liked them. Had families. Good position in the community. Everyone respected them. Not a problem. Just this little thing with alcohol. And I read those stories for years, and I thought, God, these are guys that I would want to kill. These are guys that I hate, just intuitively, because they've got everything that I don't have. Just this one little problem with alcohol. And then it dawned on me what they were saying. Look at Roger, these guys just had this one little problem with drinking, and it brought them down, and it totally trashed their lives. Now, Roger, do you have any areas like this that are working? No, I don't. I don't have a family. I don't have friends. I have to go grocery shopping at 2 in the morning so I can see who's parked in the parking lot. I can't answer the phone. I can't answer the door. There's people looking for me. That's the life I have. That's the life I have. So, I got this little problem. I think I know better. It's insane. But that's why we balk. Because somewhere in here, I think I know better. Now, I'll give you. There's some mess out here. There's some evidence that I don't know better. But as long as I'm not talking to you, and I'm just talking to me, having that little meeting with myself, I can say I know better. I think I can do this. I think I can be a one-step guy. I think I got all the information I need. I can't drink successfully. I'll cop to the allergy, absolutely. I'll cop to the obsession of the mind, absolutely. And the phenomenon of craving, check, 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 check. No problem. So therefore, I'm not drinking. Have a new life. If you've done this, you know where I'm going. Everything got worse. I got sober. I'm going to meetings, and I'm hearing everyone go, oh, I haven't had a drink in 6 months, and my life is just, oh. I haven't had a drink in a year, and I'm over there. I'm in the back of the room going, make a list. Who wants to go first? I mean, I literally was planning how to kill everyone in the meeting. I'm serious. And all I heard was, I came to AA, and everything got better. And I'm thinking, I came to AA, everything has gotten worse. They didn't like that message. They didn't want to hear that. You know, and I didn't have any connection with anyone in the fellowship, except my dad's example and a few other guys that I was watching from afar. But I sure as hell didn't have a sponsor. I sure as hell couldn't do your book, because I already knew I couldn't do 11 of your steps, because I didn't believe in God. Two, do you believe? No. Okay. Three, then I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to make a decision to turn my thinking and my life, thinking and my actions over to something I don't believe in. Four, inventory. Interesting concept. Read ahead. They want you to tell this to someone. If I do that, I'm either going to be in the hospital or jail. Forget that. Six and seven, more God. Got no use for that. Eight and nine, restitution. Interesting. So you think I may have harmed you. I think I may have harmed you too. We'll agree. But I think I know better. I think that if you did happen to experience some retribution along the way, it was probably mercifully dispensed. And you probably actually had more coming than you got, so let's just call that even. Now, 10th step, moving right along, 10th step, I got no inventory chops. So I don't have any reason to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, because frankly, I'm not even there. I'm not going there. I'm not even thinking about that. I'm just living it. All right? 11, prayer and meditation. I got no concept. Prayer. Oh, brothers, sisters, put your hand on the TV. That's right. We're going to straighten your curly hair. We're going to curl your straightened hair. We're going to get rid of the liver spots. And by the way, send $15. Meditation. Interesting concept. My concept, you said meditation. I saw a little guy in a diaper in the Himalayas hovering about 2 feet off the ground. So I got no on-ramp for any of this. Do you understand? Because I know better. These are all my fixed ideas. And my fixed ideas are killing me. They're killing me drunk, and they're killing me sober. Because all I got is me, the same operator, stone cold sober. And the analogy is they use the drunken horse thief. You got the horse thief in town, he gets drunk, he shoots up the town, they throw him in the jail. He sobers up, they let him out Tuesday. He's a sober horse thief. That's my experience. I'm 5 years sober. I haven't filed taxes in 10 years. That sound like big buck recovery? No, it's not. It's my recovery. And I got crap going on in every area of my life. The only thing that's happening is I'm not drinking. And I was blessed because I was allowed to suffer in my early sobriety and not pick up. And people would watch me. And I watch people come in, you know. I'm full of the Spirit. Oh, I love this AA thing. Oh, look at my commitments, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and I'm talking here, and I'm doing all this crap, and life has never been better. And all of a sudden, what happened to Harry? Oh, he got drunk. Really? You know, and I'm just the antagonist in the back of the room. Good for you, Harry. All right. And I'm still here. You know. I was the guy in the meeting. If I came to the same meeting more than once, they knew me right away. And I was the guy that the guy would get his sponsee aside and say, you see that guy over there? You want to be like him? Don't do the steps. That was my, I was the poster child for no recovery. So, do I have a desire to stop drinking? No fees, dues, free membership, self-supporting through own contributions, not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Don't wish to engage in any controversy, and we don't endorse nor oppose anything. Wonderful. That's pretty clear. Primary purpose, stay sober, help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Stay sober, check. Help other alcoholics. That's what we're going to talk about this month. How do I help? How do I help? Well, I can't help until I change. If I help you in my early recovery, you're dead. What I can share with you is untreated alcoholism. And we find very quickly that our alcoholism is not in the bottle. It's here, between our ears. Now, I'm going to say something that some of you aren't going to like. Probably a lot of things over the next 4 weeks. Here's what Bill said in the front of the 12 and 12. I like this. A's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, when practiced, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. That's a big damn promise. But the caveat is, if practiced as a way of life, not if done in a rote, shallow manner, not if you got your forms and checked everything off and you got your this guide and that guide. No, if you did this at depth and you practice it as a way of life, now you got something to bring. If you're not doing that, you don't have anything to bring. That's okay. You can try and help people. You won't be able to help anyone because your message won't have depth and weight. There's a lot of parrots running around the fellowship. A lot of parrots. It doesn't take anything to read Bill's essays on a step, go to step meeting and sound like Bill. That's nice. We already got a Bill. You know, God, that's what I would do. I'd read the 12 and 12 before I went to my men's step meeting so I could say something profound, you know. Shit. And while I was being profound, inside I'm thinking, what a bunch of shit. Excuse my language, but just, you want to feel crappy and hollow and empty? Be a sober hypocrite. It's just a sobriety with no recovery is hell. The last years I drank were tough. But the first 5-6 years of my so-called recovery were much worse. Because I had no anesthetic. I had no out. You know that little 5 minutes of silence we did here? Boy, I tell you, I don't know about for you, but there was a day when that was a noisy time. If I stopped and just tried to be quiet, not for 5 minutes. God, that's a little excessive. But, I mean, just try and take, you know, a half dozen deep, slow, controlled breaths. I couldn't do that. There was so much noise in my head. There were so many voices telling me what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing. It was impossible. It was impossible. So, it's not a fellowship for everybody. Now, we got some people that identify themselves as addicts, alcoholics, alcoholics, addicts. Here's the deal. We treat alcoholism. If you have a problem with alcohol, be here. But we don't treat alcoholism and anything. And I don't know what you're seeing in your meetings and in the fellowship and the meetings I'm going to. I'm seeing a lot of people come in that aren't alcoholics. We don't treat personality disorders. We don't treat depression. We don't treat addiction. Drug addiction. We treat alcoholism. Now, don't get pissed off and leave yet. Try and listen to this. It doesn't mean I can't have an addiction in addition to my alcoholism. It means when I'm doing my AA, I'm about AA. Now, there's over 220 groups using the 12 steps as a model to get over whatever their hump is that brought them in, okay? So I come in riding a bottle of whiskey. You come in riding cocaine. You come in riding heroin. You come in deading. You come in emotionally unstable. We got Emotions Anonymous. We got Al-Anon. Oh, shit. When I got here, I qualified for at least 7 12-step programs. AA, Al-Anon, NA, Emotions Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous. Shit. I mean, and I would sit there in the meeting. Sex Addicts Anonymous. There's another one. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. David and I go way back. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. You know, but I would sit in a meeting, and once in a while I'd make the mistake and muse out loud, you know, maybe I need another program, you know, and one of these kind, loving, long-timers would get me and come up and say, you stupid shit, you can't even do one program. How are you going to do 2 or 3? And I thought, Good point. And it stopped me. It stopped me. Now, read the stories in the back. Dr. Paul's the famous one. Alcoholic addict. Here's the deal. The reason those 200-plus groups are using that model, this 12-step model, is because the solution is the same. I need to have a spiritual experience. I need to have a transformative experience that changes fundamentally the way I see you and interact with you and everything else. So once we get the thing we wrote in on in an arrested state, we all have the same problem. Get what I'm saying? It's a thinking problem. It's a being problem. It never was a drinking problem. Drinking allowed me to stay alive long enough to get here. Without drinking, I'd have been a teen suicide, no doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind. So, what I tell guys when they come in with lots of issues is, look it, let's just try and put your silly butt through these 12 steps and treat your drinking problem. And let's see what's left when we get done. What my experience has been is all those other problems got addressed when I addressed the fundamental problem. Because the fundamental note here is I'm selfish and self-centered. I have disconnected from my source, from the divine source that is the source of my life, your life, everything. Okay? I disconnected from that, and I've been powered on self. And that's the problem with the debtors. That's the problem with the junkies. That's the problem with the overeaters. It's the same problem for everybody. We just get to ride in on different horses. But it's not the same when you're in the meeting with me. We're in our AA meeting. We're doing Alcoholics Anonymous. So I want you to share from that place. And when I try and orient new people when they come in our meeting, the newer people look at me and think, you're going to scare these guys away. No, I want you to know the truth. Because I've never worked with an addict who didn't have a drinking problem. I worked with a couple that thought they didn't have a drinking problem. Because they were junkies. You understand? That's a whole nother culture. Man, I'm a junkie. Oh, good. Junkie pride. Love it, love it, love it, love it. So tell me about it. You relapsed again. What happened? Well, went down to the bar, had a few scotches, and I hooked up. I said, interesting. What happened the time before? Well, I went down to the bar, had a few scotches, and I hooked up. I said, so, I think you'd have a drinking problem. No, man, I'm a junkie. I love Mac. I just love heroin. I said, yeah, but you don't go get heroin until you have a few scotches. So if the scotch wasn't there, do you think you'd make the call? I don't know. Why don't you try? Oh, he's back. Can't. So now you told me we were just going to eliminate the scotch exercise and we'd see if you hooked up without the scotch, and you hooked up again, but the scotch was there. I think there's evidence that drinking might be a problem. No, he's dead. Because he knew better. He knew better. In chapter 7, we're going to talk about that this month. One of the things chapter 7 says over and over is, I don't argue with you. You think you got a better idea? You think you can smoke pot and do these steps? You think you can cheat on your wife and do these steps? You go ahead and do that and then report back to me. That's not my experience. You go do that. You think you need to go back to your church now? Go do that. Go do that. Why? You think you drink on Wednesdays? Okay, do that. Try some controlled drinking. Try some controlled sobriety. Do that. Why? Because until you and I get full knowledge of our condition, we won't be motivated. And I pray God, you can be hopeless. That's a great place to start. It's a great place to start. But you don't have to be hopeless. But you have to hit a bottom. You have to realize at depth a demoralization of dimension that's enough to bring you to your knees. A total failure with this. So, what are we doing on time? I get a little ranty.
About 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
All right. We have the book Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of many thousands of men when recovered from alcoholism. And in that book are the 12 steps, which are the program of recovery. It's the only thing AA calls its program of recovery, those 12 steps, okay? Then we have a fellowship where we gather in community to do various recovery-based ideas. You know, we have the fellowship of the meet a girl, meet a guy. We have the fellowship of the sober this and that league. We have the coffee house fellowship. We have the come to the meeting and talk a good talk fellowship. We have the we're just not drinking here fellowship. And we have big book stuff. We have all kinds of stuff. We have some really interesting stuff going on in the fellowship. But not all of it's recovery. How do I know the difference? I won't know the difference until I've recovered. Then I'll know the difference. Then I'll know when I'm hearing bullshit and when I'm hearing AA, when I'm hearing recovery and when I'm hearing someone's version of it, some theoretical, something might be working good for Harry. I don't know. You know, I've met guys that are 30, 40 years sober. I never did a four-step, you know, and you're a pain in the ass. You know, you're alone. Look around. You're alone. Why do you think you're alone? How can you be 40 years in this outfit and never have a single person say, would you sponsor me? Would you help me? There's probably a reason for that. You know, may I please buy you a bottle? May I please? And it's, I don't know. I can't explain it. It's phenomenon to me. It's observable, but I don't get it. Because where I started from, if this outfit couldn't end up giving me something far better than I came from, I'm back. I don't want to be here. You know, when you're going happy, joyous, and free, trudge the road and all that, I'm going, exactly. Exactly. I'm going, no, no, no. I'm going to need a little more meat than that, you know. And they, oh, you got to get a service. Oh, I do. And what would that look like? Oh, you're going to help people. Oh, I am. First, I'm going to help me. Because I have problems. I gave you a litany of my problems. I mean, God, I had problems in every area. And you kept saying, oh, you got one problem. The chapter of the agnostic says it, you know. It says the main purpose of the book is to enable the reader to find the power, and the power will solve their problem. And it's singular. It says the power will solve your problem. And I'm telling you, I didn't even know that till, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. I didn't even get it. I got one problem? What would that be? Any idea, any thought that separates me from God. Or if you're agnostic, any thought or idea that separates you from this program of recovery, from the next step. What's the most important step? The one I won't do. That's the most important step, the one I won't do. I got 11 I won't do. That's a problem. So I didn't get it. I didn't get the thinking thing. I want to take a little time. I want to talk about some of the noise in the fellowship. You know, in the big book, and Dustin and I were talking before, there's always been people doing versions of this, little factions. You know, Clarence had his thing, his Christ-based thing, and other guys had their stuff, and you know, Jimmy Burwell had his atheism, and that's always been there. But it's when the book was published, the overwhelming majority of the people in what we call the fellowship were also doing the program of recovery. That's what it was. The book, the reason it had all the stories in the back and the instruction in the front was the book was designed to get it to you, and you could get sober on your own with that book, because there were not meetings on every block and hundreds of meetings in the town. There were not meetings anywhere. And so that was designed to be the sponsor. Everything I need is in there for me to identify and to figure out how to do this. Now, it's helpful now that there's so many people that have recovered, because there's great people that can help other people. We don't need specialists. We got plenty of people who've recovered. Here's one. Recovered, recovering, recovery. Might as well get right at it. This book says they were recovered. I do what they did. I'm recovered. But what I'm recovered from is the state of mind and body that I arrived in. I'm not cured of my alcoholism. Okay? So dig this. Now I'm in the meeting. I'm going, oh, "Hi, I'm Roger. I'm 30 years sober and I'm recovering." If I'm a new guy, I'm hearing, "Shit. When is this going to end?" Because if you're new and you're early in this process, it's painful. It's not feeling good. In the early stages, especially the first couple passes through these steps, especially the inventory ones, it's a deconstruction of who and what I thought I was. It doesn't feel good because now I'm half in and half out. I'm half my old me and I'm half this new me, and I don't know which one's going to work. So now we come in here. I'll give you this analogy. I'm hanging out by the 7-Eleven. Someone pulls a heist. I get shot. I end up in the ER, intensive care. Recovering gunshot wound victim. I eventually get moved to my room. I eventually recover. The doctor comes to me and says, "Hey, Bosco, if you don't want this to happen anymore, stay away from bullets." I'm going, I'm down with that. Thank you very much. I leave. I'm a recovered gunshot wound victim. You with me? When I'm new in AA, I come in. I'm in the emergency room. I'm a recovering guy, recovering from my alcoholism, okay? But this says, do what we did in the way we did it in the steps. Spiritual Experience talks about this. If you can do what we did in the light of our experience, if you can do these steps the way we have laid out to do them, you can have what we have. And the first thing that will happen is the obsession will go. But that's just the beginning. And so I come in, and I'm in the emergency room. I'm recovering. But at some point, man, I don't want to be new hearing some guy with 20 or 30 years going, "I'm recovering." I'm going, "Shit, does this never end?" Now, I'm not saying I'm recovered. It does end. You will stop having that squirrel cage brain. You will stop being nuts. You will stop, and your body will heal itself. Now that you've quit poisoning it and beating the hell out of it, that will take care of itself. But you're never going to be free. You're never going to be rid of this thing called alcoholism, because we find from studying our text that that resides in my thinking. Okay, so here's some things that we hear in the fellowship. Oh, I was not done. So then Bill in the 50s did the 12 and 12, which was a rebuttal to Ed Webster's Little Red Book. And not that there's any ego involved here. But the point is, when that came out, that was the first big split in the fellowship. Then we started having 12 and 12 meetings. The only thing, and I love the 12 and 12, don't get me wrong, but the 12 and 12 were a set of essays by one guy. The big book is the collective experience of the fellowship. Okay? So if I'm going to hitch my wagon to the AA program, it's going to be the big book. Now, the 12 and 12 is conference approved. It says that our fellowship says that that contains our message. That's true, but it's not the AA message. It's Bill's interpretation, observation, and experience with watching the evolution of this from a very unique position. And there's a lot of great stuff in there. I'm not saying that. But we started getting factions, and that has split into other things. So we won't go there, but here's one of the things you hear. So you hear people say, "No, we need to get back to basics." You know, well, there's only basics. We need to get back to the book. Well, where the hell did we go? That's like saying, "I need to find God." God is not lost. "I need to get back to the book." Well, the book is the only place you can get this if you're doing AA. If you want to do moderate or rational recovery or behavior mod, you can go do that. But if you're going to do AA, that's what you're going to do. You're going to do the book. To the best of your ability. You don't have to do it perfectly. You just have to try and then keep trying, because it's a continuous, ongoing process. It's not something I do once and get rid of it. So the fellowship has said some things that are misleading. And I don't think it was mean-spirited. I think things have morphed. So here's one. This is a selfish program. That's not what that book says. This book says we're trying to grow to selflessness. And what they did is they took an idea, which is recovery's got to be the number one priority. And it does. But it doesn't mean to the exclusion of all else. It means keep your eye on the ball. You need to fabricate a relationship with this power, an ongoing working relationship with this power. That has to be a priority. But it is not a selfish priority. Because if I hook my wagon to God, all the God stuff is going to come out of me. I'm going to want to be useful. I'm going to want to be helpful. I'm going to be a much better actor, period. Not a selfish program, selfless program. Meeting makers make it. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if it was that simple? God, it drives me nuts. Hi. You new? Yeah. How long have you been sober? Oh, 6 months. Really? What you doing? Oh, man, 90 and 90. And I said, that's nice. 90 and 90. 90 and 90. Interesting. 90 and 90. So you're going to 90 meetings in 90 days. So that's 90 hours out of 90 days out of about 2,000 hours. I want to know what you're doing with the other 1,800 hours. And I want to know this. The guy that told you, do 90 and 90, he ought to be doing it with you. Because we don't tell people what to do. We tell them what we do. And if I'm telling you 90 and 90, I'm taking your ass to 90 meetings with me. That's what I'm looking for. That's what chapter 7 says. Look for someone who's going to walk with you, side by side. Not give you a bunch of stuff. Quick edits. Not give you a bunch of stuff to put the plug in the jug and everything will be all right. God, this kind of stuff kills people. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days and now I'm drunk again. So therefore, AA doesn't work. That's not AA. The meetings. What are the meetings for? My book says the meetings are for the new person to find the fellowship they crave, to find the solution. I don't go to meetings because I need meetings. I haven't needed meetings in years. When you're new, you need a meeting. Yes, because you're recovering. You're in the ER. I need a meeting. You're damn right. Pray to God you get a good one. Pray to God you get something with some people that are recovered. But I need a meeting, yes. But after you do these steps, I'm supposed to be coming to the meeting to give to you, to be ready for that guy walking in the door. I sit in my meeting. I get there early. I sit by the door. The reason I sit by the door is because people are scared to walk by me. And so they don't tend to run out. And I have another guy that sits by the door, and we can kind of block it. But the point is, guys will come to that meeting, and they'll say, you know, I've been going in on meetings for years. I've never heard any of this stuff. It's just a big book study meeting. You know, we just read the text and we share our experience with it. I never heard any of this. I've been going to meetings for years. Or other guys will come in and they don't even get that far. They just go, man, it feels good in here. I really like the bond. I really like this place. It really feels good. What is that? And I go, oh, that's God. And they go, oh, shit. You know, no, that's God. What do you mean that's God? And I said, I'll tell you what's happening. You come in here, we hold you in the consciousness of our recovery. We hold you in our practice of practicing the presence of God, and you feel it. And you go, man, I like the way this feels. That's what you're feeling. You're feeling God. You're feeling the power of recovery. We hold you in that, and it feels good. Everyone has this instinct. How many times you walked in the room and said, I don't like the vibe? That's it. That's the sixth sense. I don't like this. And conversely, I walk in some place and go, man, I really dig this. I really like this. You're picking up the energy. The energy of recovery or the energy of untreated alcoholism or addiction. Getting back to the addict-alcoholic thing, Silkworth said he ran Towns Hospital. was designed for the treatment of alcoholics and addicts. Two different things. If we grab 100 people off the street and we shoot them up with heroin for a month, we got 100% addicts. We grab another 100 people off the street, we bring them in here, we get them drunk for a month. About 10 of us are going to say, oh, please, not now. It can't be a month already. But 90 of them will want to get the hell away from that as fast as they can because ethyl alcohol is a non-addictive drug. If it was like heroin, everyone who drank would be an alcoholic. It's not. You got to be special to be an alcoholic. Sorry, don't take nothing to be a junkie. Just takes dope. Gotta really work to be an alcoholic. You get the difference of what I'm saying? And I'm telling you, we don't send addicts out of our meeting. We don't, because there's nowhere to send them in our town. There's no strong NA that I know of. There's no strong CA. There's no. So be here with us. That's fine. Chances are, though, If you're a compulsive overeater and you're coming to my AA meeting, you're not going to stay. Why? Because you won't identify. If you're a heroin addict and that's what you think you are, you're not going to identify. You like the feel, but you won't identify. But I work with a lot of guys that have a lot of different addictions. When we're in our AA meeting, we talk AA. When we're alone, I talk to them about the same problem we talk about in AA. You're thinking, get off this thing. It's not the dope. It's not what you're stuffing, shooting, or snorting. It's what you're thinking. And what you're thinking is what always takes you back. So we get back to the problem. What is the main problem of the alcoholic? Huh? Right here. Because if the problem was alcohol, if that was whiskey, that's not a problem until it's in my system. Then it kicks off the phenomenon of craving and I'm out to the races. But as long as it's there and I'm here and I'm 2 weeks out, I'm as physically sober as I'm ever going to be. So the problem is, I got to cop to this. I got to understand the problem is here. What are the ideas that take me back to that? And until I get that, until I can get in front of that, I don't even understand what I got. Because I think I got a drinking problem. I got a distended liver. That looks like a drinking problem. No, that's the effect of a drinking problem. I got a divorce. That's an effect of a drinking problem. I got this allergy. The doctor says you got an allergy. I do. I don't feel like I got an allergy. You know, you're an abnormal drinker. I don't think so. I've always drank this way. It's not abnormal for us. It's what was normal. And there's nothing to compare it to, because after you get into your drinking career a little bit, you're not drinking with normal drinkers. You're drinking with pigs like you. Because we hang together. We gravitate into a group. And that way, we can always look at each other and go, God, if I ever get as bad as Dustin, I'd do something. But at least I'm still superior to someone. You know? I did that in the alley of the bar I drank at. I'm lining up at 8 o'clock because I ran out of booze. And I'm starting to shake. And I'm sitting in line with these guys with rope belts and yellow sneakers and no teeth and hair all messed up. And I'm looking at them, standing in line with them, saying, man, what a bunch of losers. You know, I don't see I'm in the same line at the same time of day, shaking. I know different. Here's another one. Don't drink, go to meetings, read the book. Say, you've been knocking around a bit, haven't you? No, don't drink, go to meetings, and read the book and do the book. So you go to meetings. I'm going to meetings. I'm not drinking, and I'm reading the book. I don't know about for you, this book didn't mean squat to me until I heard someone explain it. And then I went, oh. I never thought of it that way. Interesting. I'll have to put that under consideration, you know. I mean, the power of the ideas are enough. The power of the ideas are enough. But until I understand what the ideas and the principles are, they don't have much effect. Because I'm just dancing across the top of it. Meeting makers, don't drink, go to meetings. A drug is a drug. We just covered that. A drug is not a drug. A drug is not a drug. Okay? Oh, here's one. Fake it till you make it. Oh, sorry, you died. You must not have faked it good enough. You know, that tied in with the thing Chuck Chamberlain used to say, which is accurate. You can't think your way into right acting. You have to act your way into right thinking. You can't think your way into right thinking, okay? That's true to a point. And it's certainly true when you're new. You can't come here. Come to these meetings. I don't like your meetings. So what? Come here. Fine. We understand you don't like the meetings. Good. Now we've got some other things you're not going to like. They're called steps. And this is how we're going to take you through that process. I don't like that idea. That's fine. You don't have to like it. You just have to do it. Okay? But you can act as if for a period of time. So when I'm conforming, I'm showing up, I'm going to meetings. I'm not in the boat with you. I'm just watching you. I'm in the bleachers. You're playing. I'm watching. And then I might do that with the steps a little bit. And I might do that with this prayer idea and this meditation idea. But all this stuff is centered on practice. And if I'm only practicing once or twice a month, my progress is going to be pretty slow. You know? I like this one. Take what you want and leave the rest. The fellowship came up with that when they were talking about speakers. You know, I'm going to tell you my story. You may relate, you may not. If something works for you, wonderful. If it doesn't, take what you want, leave the rest. That's true of the talk. It's not true of the program. And it's transferred over, and people are going, well, take what you want, leave the rest. Yeah. So you got a 3.5-step program. How's that working for you? That's only one question. This is what I'm doing. That's wonderful. How's that working? How's that working? You got a job yet? You back in the big bed yet? How's your money problem? You know, it just, God, it goes on and on. Where is this? This is a great test for the new guy. If I could find it. Here you go. When the guy thinks that drinking, cessation of his drinking is enough, and he really doesn't have any problems, and he's really having problems finding problems. This is on page 52. Had to ask ourselves this question. Having trouble with personal relationships? Take a look there. Having problem controlling your emotional nature? That means I don't know exactly how I'm going to be at any given moment. It doesn't look like that. But did you ever have those days you wake up and all of a sudden it's just on you? Wake up and it's just dark. It's a cloud. I just woke up. I'm depressed. You know, or, you know, we don't sit around and go, well, I'm going to be pious from 8 a.m. to noon. Then I'll be resentful from noon to 3. Then I'll be repentant from 3 to 6. Then I'll be very spiritual mellow from 7. We don't have any control over that because I'm reacting to everything. And I'm reacting out of selfish self-centeredness. And that produces dissonance. That produces problems for me and for you, but mostly for me. Because I hit you at 8 in the morning, and you go, what an asshole, and you move on. But I hit you at 8:45, you at 9, you at 9:15. I got these jerks in my life all day long. And I'm living with my reaction to all of this. You're only getting banged once, and you go, well, I'm not going around that guy again. You're fine. But I'm living with me, and I'm subject to the crap that I'm generating. Prey to misery and depression, couldn't make a living, had a feeling of useless, full of fear, were unhappy. Couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Does any of that sound familiar? You're doing really well, are you? That's nice. How's your relationship with MasterCard? U.S. Bank, whatever. So we can act our way into right thinking. But at some point, I'm going to have to understand why I'm doing this. Because I just can't go to meetings because indefinitely. And I can't just go with you to the psych ward and watch you guys do a meeting, or the prison and watch you guys do a meeting, and have nothing to bring to the party. I can't do that indefinitely. What they're saying is, come here, do this stuff, and in the doing, you're going to start to change. When we can get you to start to change, then you'll know why you're doing this, and it'll take a different texture. You know, when you're giving out of ego, when you're giving out of self, I see this all the time. Guys, how are you doing? How are you doing? I said, oh, let me show you what I'm doing. And they'll whip out their calendar and show you all their commitments. I'm doing this meeting, I'm doing that meeting, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. That's wonderful. But how are you doing? Well, this is what I'm doing. Look at my calendar. Man, I am active. I am active. When you do that from ego, you end up depleted. You end up exhausted. So when we tell a guy, come in here and get busy with us, that's not the deal. Don't get busy with us. Get busy with us. But also, we need to change the inside. We got some outside activities to expose you to some different things. But you got to know why you're doing that. Eventually, I got to do that because it's what I'd be. Not because you told me to do it. Oh, everyone's doing it. So I do it. Now I go, and I sing a little AA song. And we all go, kumbaya, and we leave. And then we go back to our miserable holes we're living in. No. When I have this conversion experience, this spiritual experience, and that starts taking over my life, I go and I come back and my cup is overflowing. I'm charged up. I might be tired, but I'm jazzed. It's on. Because when I do that, that's when, for me, when I experience the presence of God, the presence of that power most in my life, is when I'm working with one drunk across the table. Sometimes it happens in rooms. Sometimes it doesn't. But that's when you're doing the deal. Because it's the deal, and it's slowly becoming who you be, That's free. And that's really exciting. That's really good stuff. So to a degree, we can act our way into this thing. But eventually, I got to learn to think. I have to learn to think, which is what 10 and 11 do for me as I'm going on and continuing this recovery process. They get me to watch my thinking, take a look at my thinking, and then be constructive about how to change my thinking, and then practice that the next day. And all they do is they raise my conscious awareness of what I be, not what I do, what I be. When I be selfish, when I wake up and my meditation's where's mine, I get that kind of day. Everything is not enough. Everything is not enough. He's got two girlfriends. I got none. He's got a new car. I'm driving a 20-year-old truck. You know, shit. Look at all the money in his billfold. You know, God. You know, I would sit at home and I'd say, I got money problems. And in my mind, I'm thinking, someone better show up here with a wheelbarrow full of cash. And God is saying, why don't you go get a job? You know, no, no, no. I'm being spiritual. So, come be with us. Walk with us. And we can tell you why we're doing what we're doing. And you can come, and you'll get some of that on you. But eventually, I have to, you have to, we have to submit to the process. Because you can't stay here out of conformity. You cannot. Because the mind will not allow you to stay. It will take you out. And if I don't have a way, like Fred and Jim, if I don't have a way to watch my thinking and be able to stop that process and see where it's going, I'm just off to the races. God, he was doing so good. He was doing so good, and then, God, he just got drunk. There's a big difference between conformity and surrender. And we can conform for a while, and most of us do conform in the beginning. But you can't stay on that basis. And surrender looks like the worst thing. It almost looks as bad as becoming an alcoholic. You know? But the very, what appeared to be the very worst day of my life was the beginning of a great blessing. But only because I recovered. So guys would say, I found out a couple years ago, guys, there used to be a pool in town about when I was going to drink. You know? Because no one could believe that I was staying sober on my one-step program. And they would say, why? And I have no idea. I have no idea. But I'm not down with the God idea. And I'm not doing, I was a liar, cheat, and a thief. I didn't want to be a phony in AA. So I just won't do your 11 steps. And I didn't pretend to do them. I just said, not for me. And if guys would make the mistake of saying, will you help me? I go, I can't help you. Go talk to him. You know, I wasn't into trying to be an AA big deal. It was the last house on the block. It was the only place they'd let me keep coming back to. You know, and that's what I did. And it worked. And I wore them out. And they wore me out. So let's be done. I wanted to do that, some of this foundation stuff, because it's important in the context of the steps to know why we're doing this and what it's about. And it's important to know that just because something calls itself an AA meeting, it doesn't mean recovery's there. I am responsible for my recovery, not you, not my sponsor, not my group. The big book, the sponsor, the group, the meetings, general service, everything is in place to help you and me find this solution. That's the whole deal, is to help the suffering alcoholic find a solution. Not the solution, a solution. We agree on this solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. We agree on this, and we know how to transmit it. We know how to share it. We know how to help each other. Uniquely fitted. So when I started finally sponsoring guys, I was about 9 years sober. And then, and only then, did I start to find out why I got sober the way I got sober. Because every son of a bitch that came to me was exactly like I was. And not one of them, and this isn't bragging, but it's the truth, not one of them has presented to me an argument I didn't have. And I got it the hard, educational, slow way. But when I got it, I have got and established a faith and a relationship with this power that is not it's not, you can't do anything to me with it. It's unshakable. I don't ever, when I run into tough spots, I don't go, oh, God's out to get me. Oh, God abandoned me. That's not it at all. It's not it at all. It's just something I did coming back to me. It's some seed I sowed at some time in the past that now the debt's coming to be paid. That's all. So I'll see you next week. Thanks a lot.